All right, people, welcome to the AFC North Talk. Thank you guys for joining us. As usual, please tell your friends about us, subscribe. We're going to talk about, obviously, the recap that happened in week three. But let's kick things off. Fellas, how you guys doing tonight?
Doing well.
I'm doing great. I think we're all doing great. Well, Ace, you know. Yeah. Yeah. A lot of things to gleam, though. You know, good stuff from Joe Burrow on Thursday. Not totally down, right? You know?
Right. That's a great segue. So let's get into the first game. Obviously, we had Thursday Night Football. That was the last time that you guys heard from us. It was right before Thursday Night Football kicked off. And then the game happened. So it was honestly, just believe it or not, even though the Bengals lost and the Browns won, to me, it was still a good game. I think a lot of people actually enjoyed this game, especially for it being Thursday Night Football. So without further ado, Quincy, you guys won, so I got to give you the floor. What did you think about the Thursday Night Battle of Ohio game?
All right. So first thing I want to mention is that I don't know how so many people could watch that game, acknowledge that it was a very well-played game on both sides, and then be like, well, both teams suck. I don't get how that happened. I think when you see two teams suck on national TV, it looks more like the Browns and the Jets did last year on Monday Night Football, where it's obvious you can tell that these two teams have problems. But nonetheless, let's talk about the game. The offense is exactly what I like to see. It's exactly what I saw during training camp with this team. You know, a lot of play action, a lot of running the ball, a lot of those kind of, you know, under center snaps for Baker Mayfield. And lo and behold, when you do that with Baker Mayfield, he ends up being a pretty decent quarterback. So good on there for the Browns. Defensively for the Cleveland Browns, there's some concern there. Now, I've taken a look at this. And the issue for the Browns is two things. One, the communication in zone is terrible. So that's going to cause a lot of problems. That's why Joe Burrow was able to get all over the place. The other thing is what I called in a video I posted earlier today. Make sure you subscribe to that in this channel. And that is the Bermuda Triangle of the Cleveland Browns defense. And it's really just two people. It's B.J. Goodson and it's Tavier Thomas. Now, Quincy, why is that the case? Well, those two players have been targeted 28 times combined, have allowed 24 completions and 231 yards for three touchdowns. That is almost half of all the Browns pass yards that have given up. And that's more than the Indianapolis Colts have given up all season. An entire defense. These two players have been bad. Specifically the slot corner, Tavier Thomas, who's starting because of a bunch of injuries. Grant Delpit was supposed to be the slot. Then it was Kevin Johnson. Then he got hurt. And it might have been Denzel Ward if Greedy Williams was healthy, because they would have put Denzel in the inside so Greedy and Terrence can play the outside, which is fine. But none of those things were able to happen because of injuries. Now you got Tavier Thomas in there. Tavier Thomas has given up over 90% of all targets thrown his way, and it's not an insignificant amount of targets that have been thrown his way. It's somewhere like 16, 17, and he's given them all up. So when you have good pressure like your defensive line's doing, it really doesn't matter, because Joe Burrow has quite literally an entire section of the field where he's like, well, this is 86%. If I throw it here to be wide open, so I'm going to just throw it there. So that's really how Joe Burrow was able to not get off the field on third down, really make those things happen, because he saw early that 20 and 93 were lined up next to each other a lot. And when those two are near each other, that's an open zone for whoever runs in there. And, you know, he took advantage of that, and good on Joe Burrow. Not a lot of young quarterbacks can acknowledge that early on. As for the Bengals, I think I saw a lot of good things for the Bengals, honestly. Like, I didn't walk away thinking that Bengals team was bad. The defense got worn out by the fourth quarter, but like anybody who's watched a Ravens game last year knows that when teams can run the ball like that, every defense gets worn out in the fourth quarter. That's why you have it like that. That's why you keep Kareem Hunt fresh in the first half, so you can run him down the defense's throat in the second half. That's why you do things. The missed tackles, that's going to happen with a lot of teams, especially with how good with missed tackles those two running backs are. As long as you can wear them down with the run early on, that's going to happen. So I don't think it's necessarily Cincinnati looked so terrible on defense. They did have some things they need to fix. No, DJ Reader can't do it all by himself. Geno Atkins was definitely missed. Mike Daniels was really missed in that game. And Jesse Bates, he had an up and down game. He looked really good against the Chargers. And, you know, he just wasn't as impactful. I don't know if he got bit. He bit on play action a lot. I really didn't get to look that deep at it. But Yeah, it was overall a good game. Joe Burrow looks fantastic. Like, he reminds me a lot of Deshaun Watson. And that can be a good or bad thing for Bengals fans. I'll warn you. Because Deshaun Watson is what I like to call a universal ball. He can ball no matter what is in front of him. Bill O'Brien, giving him all of his team, he can still go out there and make you look half decent. Like, as bad as the Texans look on Sunday, they'll probably go 8-8 at the very least, you know, because they got Deshaun Watson. He's a universal baller. Joe Burrow's the same thing. The danger with that is that universal ballers can make bad situations last forever. Think Andrew Luck, right? The whole situation with that offensive line, Andrew Luck was so good, that situation went on forever because, hey, we're winning. Why not? You know, it's not that big of a problem. Joe Burrow's going to fall into that same issue. And if Joe Burrow does not get hurt this year, I promise you Zach Taylor's not going to get fired at the end of the season because they're going to win more games than they did last year, and probably a significant portion of that. And I worry about that for Joe Burrow's development because I just don't think Zach Taylor's the guy to get the best out of Joe Burrow and to put the Joe Burrow in the best situations possible. Also, that offensive line for Cincinnati, yeah, it needs work. I don't know who Fred the Sled is. I don't know his last name, but I'm going to just call him Fred the Sled because that's what he had. That's what happened to him. Him and Bobby Hart cannot allow Myles Garrett to hit a Euro step and pop the ball out the at the quarterback's head. That can't happen. Miles is really good, but Miles shouldn't be able to do that. So yeah, Fred the Sled's got to go. I don't know if there's a better solution, but like, yo, somebody, put EDP back there. Like, somebody can be better than Fred the Sled at this point because he was awful, awful. Bobby Hart didn't look that bad because it was next to Fred the Sled, and you can put Bobby Hart. And you're putting Bobby Hart next to Fred. Please get Joe Burrow out of there.
Oh, my goodness. Like, yes, Quincy, yes.
Joe Burrow needs to have them Joe Mixon migraines right about now. Just for the because, oh, my goodness. If he keeps going out there with Fred the Sled and Bobby Hart saying, I got your back, brother, he's going to get hurt. He's going to get killed. So, yeah, that's my takeaway. I think the Bengals are a good team. That offensive line is terrible. And I think once they get healthy on defense, they'll look a lot better. But other than that, I think it was a good game by the Browns. Good performance, and you know, not good heart by the Bengals showed in that game. Overall, really fun game to watch. You know, I'm excited about both teams after that one.
Oh yeah, so I think Quincy was being very nice to our defense because they looked like trash. I'm just gonna keep it real. They looked like complete trash. And the thing that threw me off was week one. I think Tony hit on it when we first did the recap. Was they looked good? They looked like a unit that could have been top 10. They looked like the worst defense in the NFL when I watched that game in terms of tackling and things like that. I think Kareem Hunt just broke another tackle while we were on this podcast. Was how bad it was. But I think, like Quincy said, there were several things that stuck out to me. Joe Burrow obviously is a guy that's going to be able to lift this team up, but he can't do it by himself. And that's what I walked away from this game with, was it literally was all on Joe Burrow. He got no help from the defense. He was playing from behind the entire game. One thing that did feel good was I didn't have the Andy Dalton feeling or the Andy Dalton effect. Whereas if Andy Dalton's in that same situation, I have zero confidence while they're up. So for me, I think that was one takeaway that I had. Another big takeaway was a lot of people started slandering AJ Green. He didn't have the best game. I think he had three catches on about 12 targets, and a lot of people were killing him. They were like, oh, is AJ Green old? Is he done? To me, I think it's just the fact that AJ Green hasn't played in a year and a half. You know, he got injured during training camp. So that was less time that he had to spend with Burrow. You talk about COVID and Corona and everything. He hasn't really had the chance to really develop that rapport with Burrow. Now, if that continues to happen, then maybe we can talk about AJ Green possibly taking a step back. But I honestly think that it's just this guy, you know, hasn't played. He's not really in football shape. He hasn't really caught too many balls from Burrow. Outside of him, when you look at it, Tyler Boyd had a solid game, but he did have a big drop in the end zone, which was a touchdown catch that hurt. Zach Taylor, like Quincy said, Zach Taylor made some questionable calls in this game. You know, when you get down to the 1 yard line with Giovanni Bernard and you hand the ball off to Joe Mixon, that wasn't a questionable call. But then he runs like a read option with like Joe Burrow that just made no sense. So it's like, if you were going to run a read option, why didn't you just run a QB sneak on the first play and just call it a day? And some things that Zach called at times were just head scratching and stuff like that. So he's going to have to improve that there. And then, like Quincy said, offensive line, Fred Johnson almost got Joe Burrow murdered that entire game. And the whole time I'm yelling at the screen, and I felt like it was week one when it was Bobby Hart and that was happening. It's like, bench him, sit him on the bench, put somebody else in there. And for me, like, I've talked to players close to the team. I knew that Fred Johnson was actually starting that game before he actually did, because everyone was like, oh, this is going to be Billy Price's chance. And I was like, they're not going to start Billy Price. They're going to start Fred Johnson. And then Fred Johnson went out and looked horrible. Like, I tried to give him the benefit of the doubt the first drive. You guys know that me and Tony have talked about it. We thought Fred Johnson was going to be pretty good.
Yeah.
Apparently, he was pretty bad. And, you know, one thing that Zach Taylor also lets get in his way is that he lets his friends that are coaches just really put him in a bad situation. So you talk about Jim Turner, offensive line coach. He's the guy that was like, let me keep throwing Fred Johnson out there. He's the guy that was like, let me keep throwing Bobby Hart out there. And he's the guy that convinced them to keep Bobby Hart there this offseason, and is the guy that's basically saying he's not going to put Billy Price out there. So for me, that's just going to be a mistake, and that's going to get Burrow killed. I mean, this kid shouldn't have had to throw 60 times in a game. He shouldn't have had to take the hits that he did. He shouldn't have had to have a press conference saying that he's okay with getting hit, because that's not what you want happening to your number one pick. So to me, I think that the rest of the guys just need to help him out, whether it's from the coaching staff perspective, whether it's the offensive line. Defense has to do something. I mean, outside of that goal line stand, there literally was nothing that they stopped from the Browns. And that's not to take anything away from the Browns. Kareem Hunt, Nick Chubb, OBJ, amazing players. But you got to do something, guys. Like, you got to do something to try to stop these guys. And I just didn't see it at all. I really was done after Quincy, that drive where it was like, you guys didn't even throw a pass.
Oh, the 2 minute run in like time.
2 minutes, like just running down the field, and just had to see like all of our players just fly off of every single Browns player. It just was really frustrating. But this was a game that Auden Tate was a surprise scratch before the game. That made a lot of people scratch their heads. Obviously, we feel like he could have been a guy that helped. But one guy that did step it up that a lot of people in Cincinnati were kind of questioning was Mike Thomas. Mike Thomas is a guy that came from the LA Rams. He kind of developed a rapport with Burrow, had a touchdown in the game, has been kind of a reliable guy. T. Higgins was able to get some things going. C.J. Uzoma, unfortunately, goes down with that Achilles tendon tear. So they're going to have to figure out a way to replace that. But I think that the Browns, I have to give them credit. Their backs were up against the wall, like Quincy said, going into this game. This is a must win because there were so many bad narratives floating around the team. And if Cleveland loses that game, it's possible that OBJ gets traded. OBJ answers the critics, came in, balled out on William Jackson III. Baker came out and balled, only had one mistake, making an interception late. But, I mean, it wasn't anything too bad. But the Browns came out and handled business, and they did what they were supposed to. The Bengals, 0-2, but we have to build upon that. But it just showed in this game that we have to have more than just Joe Burrow show up to play. We can then take it to Tony.
Yeah, I think, look, Ace, you're being a little hard on the Bengals defense. I mean, this is a game where there were only three punts in the entire game, I'm pretty sure. So this was you might say that this was two really good offenses going back and forth. Or you could say something else about these teams, but we'll get to that in a second. I think the one thing I liked about this game was this was a pissed off Baker Mayfield. Right? I mean, this was Baker Mayfield had that kind of, he was throwing lasers out there. He was pissed off. He was tired of hearing about the negativity. And that's, this is why I liked him going to the Browns originally. I had originally said when he went to the Browns, I like Baker Mayfield. I didn't like him as QB1, but I liked him as the kind of player that the Browns need as far as turning that franchise around, right? The winning mentality. Now, that's been up and down, right? And Baker's gone through all kinds of crap since he's gotten there. But this is a guy who came out focused, man. He didn't throw an incomplete pass, I believe, until the second quarter, halfway through the second quarter in this game. So he was very good, sharp in this one. This is what Quincy wanted to see out of Baker for, like he was saying, for so many years now. And then that Browns rushing attack, Chubb is one of the best backs in the league. And that shows. But I want to give credit to Quincy, because I think it was off air, but it was a couple weeks back, Quincy, you were telling me that you expected to see a big dose of Kareem Hunt, and that Kareem Hunt could be just as good as Nick Chubb in this offense. He was. I mean, this was a great 1-2 punch. And look, the defenses in this game were not great. I think I come away from this game saying to myself, both defenses are probably a little suspect. But regardless, the Browns have a great 1-2 punch in Chubb and Hunt. If they can make that work going forward, they can be a dangerous offense. We know that. We've talked about, you know, the talent on this team is not the problem. Going to Joe Burrow for a second. Joe Burrow, yes, he looked good in this game. You're not going to have big major criticism, just like week one. You're not going to have major criticisms about Joe Burrow after 2 weeks. The one thing that if you're going to criticize anything, it's still, I think, his inability to hit that deep ball. I think A.J. Green has been a little frustrated the last couple weeks, certainly, because he hasn't really gotten involved, and he would be the guy you'd want to hit on those deep. There was John Ross as well. PFF, I think, has Joe Burrow as one of 12 on deep balls. Joe Goodberry, I should say, has him one of 20. I don't know, different charting there. But regardless, it's been a thing with Joe Burrow. You watch him play, everything's underneath. Everything's short throws, run after catch. It's actually made Joe Burrow, he has the lowest yards per attempt in the league at 5.2 yards per attempt. And that's by far. I mean, he's by far the lowest. The next highest would be Sam Darnold, nearly a whole yard higher, 5.9. So 0.7 yards there. So that's one thing to watch going forward with Burrow. Can he start to hit those deep throws, or do teams start to push in a little bit, put more guys in the box, not necessarily to stop the run, but to stop Burrow, to try and make him beat us deep, right? Go to a more cover two type look. The other thing about Joe Burrow is he's avoiding sacks. I mean, look, no one's going to sit here and say that the Bengals O-line is doing a great job of protecting Joe Burrow. That is not happening. But Joe Burrow's not getting sacked at an astronomically high rate. I think his sack rate, and this is a guy who's thrown the ball over 100 times already through 2 weeks, I think is only somewhere around like 5 or 6%. So in that way, you got to give him credit for getting rid of the football, not getting sacked with an offensive line as bad as the Bengals have. And also not throwing interceptions either. I mean, and not throwing into coverage. I mean, you are rarely saying about Burrow, boy, did he not read the defense correctly on that play or anything like that. I think these are all things that you should be excited about if you're a Bengals fan right now in Joe Burrow. And remember, I mean, this is a guy who had no offseason. I mean, he had no training camp. I mean, this guy had 14 padded practices before he started a football game. So, I mean, I think all signs arrow pointing up for Burrow and for the Browns. I mean, look, this is certainly what they wanted, right? Yes, it comes against the Bengals team. That is a two-win team coming in, but they have some hype around them with Burrow. But I think for the Browns, I mean, they just needed to get a win like this. They needed to look like this to believe in themselves again, because like Quincy was saying a week ago, this is a team that's about ready to push the eject button on the whole project. So good win for the Browns. And I think, for the Bengals, like we've been saying, things to build around.
Sonny.
Yeah, for me, this game was entertaining. Let me start with the Bengals. I actually admire how Joe Burrow played, because that O-line was bad. And let me talk about the two O-lines first. Before the season started, I commented that these two O-lines were rebuilt. I seen Cleveland now play twice because they play against us the first week, and this was Thursday night. I think Cleveland's O-line has played very well throughout 2 weeks. Very, very well. I actually would say from the four teams in the AFC North, they have been the best O-line for what I've seen out of the AFC North. The Bengals, on the other hand, I think they're still probably the worst O-line in the AFC North, and that is problematic. But still, Burrow didn't stall. I mean, for a rookie, that's usually a disaster, and he's still there balling. But what Tony was bringing up, yes, he might think and dunk a lot or not very deep balls, but the reality is, how? He's about to get clobbered, right? He knows he's about to get murdered, so he needs to throw that ball quick. I said before that game that if Cleveland ran the ball, essentially run the ball, and then that allows play action and easier completions for Baker, they will win the game. Baker, for me, for what I was watching in that game, still wasn't making a lot of reads, but the game plan worked because they play from the play action, running the ball. Cleveland has two of the top, 10 best running backs in the whole league, right? And you can rank them however you want, but at least those two are in the top 10, in my opinion. So that's how that game plan should go. Run the ball and play action. Now, because I went and rewatched the game, I'm surprised this game was as tight as it was. Think about Cleveland dominated D-line-wise. Cleveland dominated O-line-wise. Usually that spells blowout, and it was still close. Now, this is not me saying Cleveland played bad. Cleveland played what they needed to do to win the game, and they dominated in that fashion. But still, this is me saying I don't even know how Cincy stayed in that game. And it's all about Joe Burrow. Joe Burrow kept standing tall. Zach Taylor is going to – I guess he doesn't have aspirations of being there for a while because you cannot put your rookie with the pressure that he's getting to throw it 61 times, right? You need to – at some point say, we need to get more creative. We need to get more on the running scheme. If my right side is trash, let me get on the left side. Maybe fake then just roll him out, play action, roll him to the right because, you know, I feel like the Cincinnati Bengals needed to do more to help Burrow, and it wasn't there. So, look, since he played okay, yes, the defense was bad. And the Browns play well. The Browns play what I expect them to do. This is what the Browns need to do going forward. Run, play action, and dominate. I mean, again, I think the O-line for the Browns is very encouraging. That's good for Baker. That he has time. It's back-to-back games. And they have a lot of building blocks to go forward. In the case of Cincinnati, I think that obviously this year I never thought they were going to be in the playoffs. But they have a lot of encouraging things, and what they need to do is make sure they don't do anything to F up the future years, meaning they need to make sure they protect Joe Burrow, running the ball more, figuring if they can work something out on that right side to get it better. But they cannot say, hey, Burrow, let's keep throwing it 60 times a game to see if we win like two more games, and then next year or at the end of the year you get an injury, then now my next year against compromise.
Yeah, definitely. So we had the first matchup with the AFC North, similar to what we had the first week. So now let's move on to the rest of the AFC North, and let's talk about the Steelers and the Broncos. And Tony, we'll bring you in because you're obviously our expert on that category. So let's get your thoughts on that matchup.
Yeah, well, the first thing I want to say is, like, look, the Steelers avoided injury apocalypse that was week two, right? I mean, you know, this was a tough week. I know the Bengals lost Uzoma, the Ravens lost Tavon Young. Yeah, and I mean, just around the NFL, it was an insane week for injury. I mean, look, I didn't have to look far because the Broncos lost Drew Lock and Courtland Sutton in this game. Courtland Sutton's done for the year with an ACL. Drew Lock's going to miss half the year. A terrible week. I mean, Saquon McCaffrey, we can go on and on. So happy defense. Yeah. Happy the Steelers avoided injury in that way. And look, happy to be 2-0. I mean, no doubt about it. I mean, this is a team. Remember, this time last year was the week Ben went down. So this was a rough year. And this is also the week we traded for Minkah. So remember, that was not only the Steelers fans trying to deal with the loss of Ben a year ago. They're also trying to defend trading away their first round pick when it seemed like all hope was lost. So happy to be 2-0. Not necessarily happy with the Steelers' performance in this game, though. This was a very sloppy game from the Steelers. I think John Ledyard, who is the former host of Locked On Steelers, I thought he summed this game up best. He tweeted right after the game, Deontay Johnson's entire skill set is the Pittsburgh Steelers team in a nutshell. And I thought that perfectly encompassed this game and really this team so far, because it's been a roller coaster. And I've talked about Deontay Johnson before. I think Deontay Johnson is the most talented receiver the Pittsburgh Steelers have right now. He's a great route runner. He's amazing in space. You watch, he had a punt return called back in this game, but he returned it for a touchdown. Great at making guys miss. I actually thought his free kick return that he had in this game was even better. I know there's only 11 guys on the field, but he actually made like 20 guys miss in that play. It was insane. Had a nice touchdown catch in this one. He had to work through a defender, get a ball behind him. Those are the good parts, but the bad parts of Deontay Johnson are just as bad. I mean, he had a fumble on the opening play of this game on an end around. The Steelers are trying to work more end around into the offense. I think opposing defenses will like it if Deontay is not going to be able to catch the ball. He had a big drop on third down. Late in this game, he's consistently on the wrong page with Ben as far as running the wrong routes on those option routes. So, you know, it's been an up and down thing. And it's an up and down game for the Pittsburgh Steelers. I mean, this was a roller coaster of a game. The Steelers go up big in this game, 17-3 early. Of course, Drew Lock went out of this game early. Nice long touchdown to Chase Claypool. And by the way, Chase Claypool right now, if you go on PFF, he is the number one rated wide receiver by offensive grade in PFF. Now, I don't know. He's caught 5 balls this year, and he's been good. I don't know that he's the best receiver in football so far, PFF.
how many catches did he have?
5 catches so far.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. But no, he had a great catch and run on an 84-yarder there. The offensive line in this game, a lot of people worried about I certainly did. A lot of people were worried about the offensive line going into this game because there was no David DeCastro. The Steelers lost their starting right tackle last week to an ACL. They played terrific in this game. I mean, Ben had all time to throw. Not that he used it, but he had all day to throw. And then the defense in this game, while there's going to be a lot of people that are going to criticize this defensive performance, and certainly there's a lot to criticize, I thought the big two things that this we know about this defense, that they get turnovers and they get sacks, were both true. And that's a positive sign, at least, going forward, because, you know, I've talked about this, right? This is a team that a year ago got 38 turnovers. That's going to regress. Well, it's not regressing so far. They're still on pace. They had two turnovers on Sunday, still on pace for 32 for the year. And I'm pretty sure that would be a record. I mean, I went back 10 years to look for a team that had 30-plus turnovers 2 years in a row. Couldn't find one. So made seven sacks in this game as well. Also, another thing I want to point out about this defense, because, look, obviously not a great performance from them, especially going up against a backup quarterback, but this is the seventh time this defense has been asked to defend a one-score lead late in the game. And they are 7-0 in those situations. So this defense, you know, I saw articles written in Pittsburgh this week. This defense lacks the killer instinct. How do they let the Broncos hang around? Killer instinct this defense definitely has. Like I said, 7-0 when defending one-score leads late in the fourth quarter. But those are the good parts. And much like Deontay Johnson, I can tell you all the good parts, but there's a whole bunch of bad parts of this game. The Steelers' offense in this game was 2 of 12 on third down. That is not winning football. That is not going to get it done. That is not efficiency. And, you know, that's the kind of thing we saw to Mason Rudolph and Duck Hodges last year. They've got to be better on third down. And if it weren't for this defense kind of bailing them out late, they would have lost this game. And when I talk about the sloppiness, I mean, it's not just on the offensive side, because special teams, okay, the Steelers cut their punter going into week one. They hire Justin Colquitt because they want more consistency, right? We want consistency out of this. Special teams, we don't have to worry about punters kicking 30-yard punts. Well, Colquitt in this one had a 36-yarder, a nice 36-yard punt in this game. And I know we talk, you know, you talk about out-kicking your coverage. I don't know if there's such a thing as under-kicking your coverage, but maybe Colquitt managed that on this one too, because you take a 36-yard punt, you had a 9-yard return on it, you got a net of 27. You put the Broncos immediately in field goal range on that one. Awful, awful play. The two bad turnovers by the offense. Look, we've talked about Ben Roethlisberger in the offseason about whether or not his arm is going to be okay, whether he's going to recover from the elbow surgery. Look, the problem with Ben Roethlisberger is not in his elbow. It's in his head. The guy makes really dumb decisions. I've harped on this for so many years with him, and I'm going to do it again, because Ben Roethlisberger had an awful, awful interception. This is how I got the Tony the Hater nickname on Locked On Steelers, because I'm tired of Ben Roethlisberger throwing these dumb interceptions. This guy had all day to throw. There's no one open. Just throw the ball away, Ben. He refuses to do it. Throws a dumb interception. It wasn't like it was a great play by Justin Simmons. I mean, Ben just floated in there into coverage, and he came down with it. That was a bad interception because it was right after halftime. The Steelers had good field position, potentially could kick a field goal, potentially get a touchdown, make this, you know, from a 17-3 lead to potentially a 24 or 20-3 lead. No, instead they give the ball back. The worst one, though, was the Benny Snell fumble. And I know we were all big on Benny Snell a week ago, but Benny Snell had an awful game in this one, and nothing worse than that fumble he had after the safety. The Steelers go up in this game 26-14. They, like I said, Deontay Johnson had a nice return on the free kick, and Benny Snell immediately fumbles. This is a team that could have gone up. At that point, it could have been, they could have gone up to, you know, by 19. They could have gone up by 15. Either way, you're talking about a two-score game with a two-point conversion or a three-score game. And again, you know, instead, Benny Snell fumbles, puts the Broncos in good field position. They go down and get a touchdown. And we're talking about 10 and 14-point swings here. And then defensively, look, I'll talk for a second just about the penalties on defense, because I think they were a major part of this game. And it's something the Steelers absolutely have to clean up. Four penalties in this game on the defense to keep Broncos' drives alive. All three scoring drives in the second half assisted by penalty, pass interference or roughing the passer. These got to be eliminated, right? I mean, these are pass interference calls. Look, were they ticky-tack? Are Steelers fans upset about it? Of course. But no fan has ever been, you know, no fan has ever excited about a pass interference call against their defense. They got to clean that up. I was happy today to see that Tomlin is actually going to bring NFL referees into practice this week to try and clean this up, because this was a bad game for them defensively. Also, you know, look, the Steelers defense in this game, just generally speaking, a little too many holes in this. And we should have mentioned it last week, because Daniel Jones went on a 19 play drive last week. And that was in a game where Saquon Barkley could not move the ball whatsoever. So there's a little more holes in this defense than you'd like to see, certainly from a defense that considers itself to be a top five, top three, top one defense in the NFL. I think the problem for me right now defensively is that Keith Butler is turning up the blitz so much, and their next gen did a nice XY coordinates on this to show not just how much pressure this defense is getting, because obviously the Steelers defense is generating more pressure than anyone by far in the NFL, but they're also blitzing far more. And I think the problem is they're not only they're blitzing, but they're dropping back into like a spot drop zone, which for these quarterbacks are easy to pick apart, especially when you're when you're leaving gaps in that zone by blitzing. So I like to see Keith Butler and the Steelers defense go back to more of the pattern matching man concepts that they went with last year. I know that this is something that Dick LeBeau and Keith Butler like to do against younger quarterbacks. And, you know, when you're going up against Daniel Jones and Drew Lock, and in this game, it was mostly Jeff Driskel. I understand it, but going forward, they got to clean that up because, you know, guys like Deshaun Watson coming to town this week, if they're going to spot drop against him, he's going to pick them apart. And then offensively, I talked about the 2 of 12. This team right now has an over-reliance on catch and run, and they've got to clean that up. They've got, you know, Seattle talks about let Russ cook. There's a growing movement in Pittsburgh right now, let Ben cook, because there's a little too much quick throws in this in the game right now. I'd like to see Ben like to, you know, chuck it down the field. Look, the two times that Ben Roethlisberger really got a chance to open up in this game, the first time it was Chase Claypool for the 84-yarder. The second time it was Deontay's touchdown. Like to see this offense open up a little bit more, trust Ben Roethlisberger a little bit more in this game. Yes, he's still getting on the same page with guys. Ebron is not a part of this offense just yet. And like I said, Deontay Johnson is an absolute roller coaster ride. But this offense is just a little too reliant on little dink and dunk on plays like third and two. When just throw it past the sticks. Too much of this is behind the sticks. So a ton to work on. Obviously, happy this team is 2-0, but a ton to work on for this team. And Quincy, I think Tony, it was on. Yeah.
Tony, before we move to Quincy, I want to ask you something.
Yeah.
Since you're a PFF guy, can you check me the Minka grade?
Well, people. Yeah, Minka had a bad game. Yeah, Minka had a bad game.
Check me for overall for 2020 because they play a trash team the week before. Just check me that. Like I said,
I just went on like a 30-minute rant about how I'm not happy with the defensive performance.
Overall, 43.8.
One thing, like I said, I think I said this on Quincy's show, though. I expected this team early on to look a lot like the 2019 team, and that is coming true. I mean, offensively, this looks a lot like what we saw in 2019, an offense that's going to having some trouble moving the football, being efficient. Defensively, though, they're getting away with it right now. We'll see what happens when they go up against better quarterbacks because that's going to happen this week.
All right. Sonny.
I think Q wanted to talk. Go ahead, Q.
All right, so interesting 2 weeks for the Pittsburgh Steelers because we joked last week, hey, they have a preseason. They can make a lot of mistakes against these two teams and generally be fine because even if I think the Steelers are going to go 6-10, I think these two teams are worse than 6-10.
Yeah.
They got a break. They played Jeff Dismal Driskel. Anybody who watched the University of Florida in 2014 knows about Dismal Driskel. I don't know how he's still in the league, but hey, shout out to him. He's still in the league. He got an opportunity to play. Now, my biggest issues with Pittsburgh and my biggest, I don't want to say concern because I'm not really concerned if Pittsburgh wins a lot of games this year.
But, what are your concerns? I'm interested.
So, one, we talked about Big Ben and we talked about how this is similar to kind of the 2019 offense. The one thing that's much different is that Big Ben threw way more pass attempts than anybody would have let Duck or Mason Rudolph throw last year, which is going to put that defense on the field more, which is going to overexpose them and get them tired faster, which is going to cause a kind of a domino effect. Two, there are some massive leaks on this Pittsburgh Steelers defense, and those leaks cannot be ignored. Noah Fant, I don't care how good Noah Fant is. If Jeff Driskel's throwing you the ball, you should not have a good day against a top three defense if you're on the Denver Broncos. And again, this is all like everything preseason. The talk about Pittsburgh was predicated off this team having what people were saying at worst was a top three defense. At best, the best defense. Some people, and I'm not saying Tony did this because Tony's a reasonable Steeler fan, but some people were telling me this was going to be 2015 Denver Broncos defense. No, it is not that. It really hasn't been consistently top 10. They've been top 10 in some moments at the end of the games when they need it. But again, it should be really easy for them to look like a top 10 defense against Jeff Driskel and Daniel Jones. Like, I'm sorry. I don't think highly of those two quarterbacks, especially Jeff Driskel, but you should be more consistently better. The issue with Pittsburgh's defense, though, is penalties. Too many penalties on the defense. Minkah Fitzpatrick specifically. A lot of penalties from Minkah Fitzpatrick. I don't know what's going on with him. I don't know what's going on with his mind. But he looks like the B-plus safety that I said he was at the beginning of the season, that he was in Miami instead of the A-plus. Like, he doesn't look first team right now. He might develop into that later on in the season.
Last year.
He was last year, but he's B plus right now. If I look at his PFF grade, he's F minus. So, you know, it's I don't think it's all on Minka, though. I think Devin Bush hasn't developed into that all-round linebacker that Pittsburgh has thought he was going to be. He's not been good on coverage, giving up about 64% of his targets. Not really been locking it down like he wished, like you wanted him to, not been making that step. And Vince Williams just doesn't look like the same guy anymore. I don't know if that's just a two-game sample size, but I've not been impressed with what I've been seeing out of him. But maybe that's just my eyes. I'm seeing something wrong. But Big Ben, we talked about Big Ben, right? Last year, he was bad in the first two games. Tony, you told me this. He's always bad in the first two games. His QBR for the first two games of last season was about 50, in the 50s, 52, 53. You can correct me if I'm wrong there.
There's no way. There's no way it was. Was it really?
It was that. It was bad. It was the worst one on the team.
Like, no, there's no way it was that high. There was no way it was that high. It had to have been like 20. He was awful last year.
That's what I'm saying. It's lower this year. I don't know how it's lower. It doesn't look like he's played worse than he did those two games, but it is lower. And with QBR, they account for decision-making, ball placement, a lot of things. This ain't so fly about Big Ben. And what I worry about is this defense goes up against a quarterback that can actually play. Are these same holes going to exist? Are they still going to get picked apart? And if that's the case, is Big Ben really going to be able to score the amount of points against a decent defense that he's been able to score against two, you know, below average teams? So that's concerning. What I saw out there from Pittsburgh did not make me feel like I have to change my mind on that 6-10 prediction. It looks real 6-10 out there. Now, look, you're 2-0 though.
We're 2-0. 6-10 looks a lot like 0-2, but
you're 2-0. Now you're 2-0. Let me be fair. You're 2-0. If Browns were 2-0 against two terrible teams, I'd be sitting here like we can fix all these problems. So, you know, maybe I'm just being a hater, but I hate all the teams in the AFC North. I'm just really critical about Pittsburgh. So it can be fixed. Big Ben could be better. Minka has to play a lot better. This defense has to be more consistently a top three defense. It's not on Minka. It's really on everybody else. But, you know, Minka was the guy who got all the credit last year when the defense turned it around.
Right.
So if the defense is not looking like that top three defense and Minka's there, well, you got to look at Minka. You got to look at everybody else, too. So,
well, you got to look at our teams all of a sudden figuring out how to scheme around Minka. And if so, defensively as a coaching staff, you got to figure out, okay, well, how do we put Minka back in a position to be successful? And if they can't do that.
Has anybody ever figured out how to scheme around Ed Reed?
No, that's what I'm saying. Like you know, they got to put Minka in a situation to be successful. And obviously, he was not good this week. But if defenses are exposing him, then you as a defensive coordinator have to start to reassess: are you putting Minka in his best position? It's two game sample size, so I'm not going to start crapping on Keith Butler just yet.
You're 2-0. You're 2-0.
Yeah, we're 2-0.
You're 2-0. It's a two game sample. You don't have to panic yet. I'm not saying panic. I'm just saying keep an eye on these things. And Minka, like, the thing with Minka is you gave up that first round pick not to get a good safety. You gave up that first round pick to get a great safety. You gave up that first round pick to get an all-pro safety. Right. A guy like Earl Thomas. A guy like, you know, not prime Ed Reed. That's ridiculous. But, you know, a game changer at that safety position. But if you're a game changer at that position, you can't allow yourself to be schemed out, especially at free safety. Like, that's not an excuse I'm going to buy for Minka. Minka's got to play better. And even when he's involved in the play, he has to play a cleaner game. Yeah. And you know, he's the best player. Well, TJ Watt's a good player, but we don't really talk about line players as that kind of like impact unless they're like getting sacks and pressures. And he's doing that. TJ's doing his job. He's one of the best in the league. But with Minka, the defense, everybody outside of that front five, they run a 3-4. It's going to be on Minka, and Minka has to play better. And, you know, you also kind of have to expect Devin Bush to take a step up more than what he has because, what, it's his third year? And you're kind of expecting him to take that same step that – I can't believe I'm going to forget his name. Ohio State Buckeye, tremendous linebacker.
Ryan Shazier
took in his third year where he became a absolute baller, and that just doesn't look like it's going to be the case. But he played in Michigan, so what can you expect? that's my thoughts on the Steelers. I think they're 2-0, so who – if you're excited about them, you have all the right in the world to be excited about them. They're 2-0. Who am I to tell you not? But I am saying this does look like a paper 2-0.
I would agree with you very quick with Quincy. I think the big thing right now in the defensive side, well, if I talk about the offensive side, I expected the offense to start slow, right? Ben coming back for more than a year to be off. these receivers, most of them new to him, right? So you will see some growing pains. But that defense is basically intact from last year, right? Most of the starters are still there. I think the front is still very strong. I saw Dupree balling against a Denver Broncos O-line that is weak too. Right, don't let's not see that Denver Broncos. So they had gone back-to-back week against a bad O-line, which that D-line, it helps that D-line then ball out, but also should help that secondary. And I'm trouble for that secondary. From Minka to the corner, that secondary has not looked clean, has not looked good. And I think the Steelers need to figure out because, look, you're going to start seeing not only better quarterbacks, you're also going to start seeing a little bit better O-line, but also better receivers. How is that secondary going to hold? I'm not sure. It's not looking great. But like Quincy said, they're 2-0, which is you all have to do is win one game at a time, and the Steelers have been doing that.
Yeah, they got time. They got time to fix these things, too.
Lot to work on. I mean, I'm not going to disagree with you guys. I mean, there is a lot to work on both sides of the ball.
Right. I think when you look at that game, a lot of people are going to give them crap about Jeff Driskel looking pretty good. But you got to think about it going into this. And I think, you know, a lot of people were wanting to crown Justin Herbert as well. But you got to realize, like, these defenses game plan specifically for one type of quarterback. And being a guy that's had Jeff Driskel on my team, he's a vastly different quarterback than what they were facing before that. He's more mobile. He's a totally different quarterback. So sometimes I think that can catch defenses off guard. But what was inexcusable to me in this game was just Pittsburgh having that lead early and Ben just decides, hey, I'm just going to start turning the ball over. That just was not something that bodes well for them. And, you know, listening to some Steeler fans around, they said that he has a tendency to do this. Like anytime they try to get a lead, he just starts turning the ball over. So that cannot happen. But this is a decent Denver Broncos team. I mean, you talk about Noah Fant. He's a talented guy for sure. But I think it just really caught them off guard. Melvin Gordon had some runs there. Like you guys talked about, Deontay Johnson, he's going to be the X factor for the Steelers. But I can't tell if this guy's going to be the next AB or the next Dante Moncrief. I don't know. He decides that he wants to be.
He can't decide either. Play to play. He's like, this one I'm going to be AB.
Right. But I think overall, TJ Watt, we're seeing a hell of a year from him. But this is going to have to be something that we keep in the memory banks and just have to see when they play some of these teams like a Baltimore, a Cleveland. How are they going to play against those teams? And so that's what we have questions about coming from this game. But I think Pittsburgh did what they were supposed to do, and they still pulled it off at the end, even though it wasn't a great performance by them. They still came out with the W.
Yeah. Go ahead. I think we're going to find out from Watson this week. I mean, it's not going to take long. Yeah.
By the way, definitely. I'm calling my shot right now. It's September 22nd, 2020. You can record this. You can quote me on this. I'm going to say it right here. When the Steelers go and play Baltimore, the first game, like I think that's what, at Pittsburgh in like week eight?
7, 8, yeah, something like that.
Just like I said, the Baltimore Ravens would blow out the Patriots, and I was right on that. I'm making my guarantee of the year. That's going to be a massive blowout. That's going to be a massive I don't like any of those matchups for Pittsburgh. That's going to be a massive blowout. And you know, hey, Steelers fans.
I was going to say, we're already trying to game plan for 2017 Ebron, just in case he shows up, you know?
2018, Eric Ebron. 2018. 2017, not a good year. We don't talk about 2017 or 2019.
Defensively, you're getting 2018 Minka Fitzpatrick out there, which is fine. So, right. And Big Ben with those interceptions, man, like, you know, quarterbacks tend to age like Benjamin Button. They kind of go out like they came in. And the big issues they had coming in, those are the issues they kind of go out on. Big Ben's big issue coming in, massively. Like, he had 1 year where he had 17 touchdowns, 23 interceptions, I believe. Mm-hmm. By the way,
But that was year three. I mean, that's ages ago. It's 15 years ago.
I know, but I'm saying, like, come in like you go out. And thankfully, Big Ben was not drafted in this era where, like, if you would have had that year in year three, he would have been in the XFL holding a clipboard forever and not been able to develop. So, again, maybe we shouldn't be so harsh on these quarterbacks after a few games or after a few years. But quarterbacks do tend to age out like they came in.
Wait. But you're not saying that Ben's going to have more interceptions than touchdowns this year, are you?
No. He'll be close, though. He'll be close.
He's 5-1 right now. I mean, it would take a hell of a performance on his part to screw that up.
Big Ben can throw three.
Hashtag let Ben cook. We can run those.
Let Ben cook. Listen, yeah,
let Ben cook, and we'll find out how great his communication is.
The ball 41 times.
Deontay Johnson.
We're saying throw the ball downfield. Yeah,
we'll find out. Because let Ben cook and throw that ball to Juju downfield and be short on one of them throws. He ain't got the same zip. It'll come back.
He doesn't have a zip. I mean, the arm strength is not a problem.
I'm not saying he's going to come back down to like more interceptions, but he'll probably be about maybe four or five more touchdowns and interceptions, which is like a decent enough ratio.
Yeah, I'm probably looking at like a 30-12 type year in my book, but we'll see.
30-12. Okay.
So obviously the Steelers are taking on the Texans next week. We're going to get into that on our preview show on Thursday, but the Ravens took on the Texans this week. Sonny, what were your thoughts on, to me, I thought it was a pretty big beat down there, but what were your thoughts on the game with the Texans?
It was a different game. Usually you see us just early as killing them on offense and then just sustaining on defense, and the offense was moving, but it wasn't scoring touchdowns all the way early, right? There were a couple field goals there. We're having troubles now in the interior O-line. Skura came back. And he came back from whatever CL he had in that knee, he blew up. And I was surprised that he came back. He went out week 10, I think it was last year, and that Monday night against the Rams, and he was able to make it to the opener. But now it's back-to-back weeks that there's pressure in the interior, and Skura's the culprit. The rookie, which you would think there's growing pains, the third-round rookie there, Phillips, he is playing way better than our center, which is a veteran. That's the main concern. So there was penetration there. Lamar got sacked, I forgot how many times, four or five times.
Most
of them was in through the middle. And even with that, he escaped through a couple. But look, still with that, we were able to run the ball. He was able to throw the ball. Lamar has been looking so good in the pocket this year. And throwing on the pass, he got better. Now, back-to-back week, he looks better in the passing game than he did last year. So Lamar is doing his part. The running backs, it's funny because people are like, oh, Ingram. Oh, no, J.K. Dobbins. No, Gus Edwards. So we went, Gus Edwards was our highest rusher this week. And right now we have three guys that can rush the ball very, very good. Now on defense, I would say pass rusher is still our biggest problem, right? We cannot generate a pass rusher like the Steelers can, but we blitz. And then we have the corners to create turnovers. Humphrey created a fumble, LJ4, which has a hell of a game. I think VFF, and you can go check your boy LJ4, Tony, and PFF. I think it's the highest rated middle linebacker.
I miss him.
He scooped it for a touchdown. Peters, oh my God, this dude has a knack for the ball. They were playing man, and then he was watching the guy on the flat. I think could have been the running back, I'm not sure. And he sees Watson just looking, and he bails his coverage and goes and makes a hell of an interception. Watson, and then let me say something. Watson is incredible at eluding sacks. I mean, he would look amazing at eluding sacks, but our coverage was just that much better. And even though he had time, our coverage was great. Our defense has allowed only two touchdowns in these two games. They've been playing great, and the offense has been still performing well. Again, this wasn't as good a performing as they had against the Browns, but still, even with that, even for me saying like, it felt like that the best games that we play, we still ended up being a big win. So overall, the team looks good. I think they're ready to play Kansas City. That's going to be a fun game. It's going to be a challenging game, and can't wait for Monday night.
So we got to talk about Patrick Queen. What's going on with Patrick Queen? Because I'm seeing this grade. What's going on with Patrick Queen? Because the Bengals linebackers are looking atrocious. How has Patrick Queen looked?
Patrick Queen has looked good. I wouldn't say that he has been looking, oh, my God, A+. I will give Patrick Queen a solid B, B-2B. It helps to have a really good secondary, right? So he goes to position. He has been out of position a couple of times. But for the most part, he's doing what they're asking for. Now, what I will say is the Ravens are not asking him to do a lot. Like, if you go back and check what the Steelers asked for Bush when he came into the league, the Steelers ask for Bush more than what the Ravens are asking for Queen, especially how LJ Fort is playing. They have been with that allowed to just say, okay, Queen, you're going to be here in certain situations, certain blitzes when they need to cover the running back, and then rotating with Malik Harrison. LJ Fort right now has been linebacker one for the Ravens. I don't think that was the intent, but the dude has taken the job. He's the veteran. I wouldn't say he has looked, oh my God, Pro Bowler.
Right.
Nope. I think he's solid. I think he, the word I was used is solid. He looks solid. He looks like a first round rookie. You know, he looks like a first round rookie. He has made mistakes. He also has made plays. There was for some reason the Texans went on a 4th-and-1, and they decided to go shotgun on their own 30. They went shotgun. We blitzed. Deshaun Elliott came in a blitz, and Queen was there defending Fells, the tight end, and he made that pass also difficult. So he basically Watson threw it to the floor because Queen was there covering Fells. So Queen is looking good, but I wouldn't say he's the next coming out of Ray Lewis, right? He still has a lot of growing to do. Now I wouldn't say he looks atrocious either, Ace. He's just solid.
Gotcha. Tony, what are your thoughts on this game?
I don't have a ton because it kind of played out almost, you know, exactly like we said it would, right? I mean, this Ravens team is going to run away with it. How are the Texans going to slow this offense down? And then, you know, it's Watson running for his life out there. I think we probably learned, you know, I know this is AFC North talk, but the Steelers played the Texans this week. So I probably learned a little bit more about the Texans than I did the Ravens. I think we confirmed one thing. The Texans run defense, very bad. Very, very bad. We saw what Clyde Edwards-Helaire was able to do to that Texans defense. And then in this game, I'll tell you what the Ravens did. Whatever they wanted to do running the ball is what they did. Because that Texans defense was awful. I will give the Texans credit. They were probably a little more frisky than I thought they would be, especially at different points in this game when it felt like, okay, it's game over. This is when, especially when with a coach like Bill O'Brien, you know, the game gets out of hand. Felt like the Texans, they could have got back into this at a couple points. They settled for field goals instead of touchdowns. But, you know, overall, I mean, this was, you know,
It was a road game for the Ravens. And remember, they're coming from a mini bye, which I called it. They came from a Thursday night.
Yeah. Yeah.
So they have extra time to prepare for the Ravens. So I think offensively, they should have played better, in my opinion.
Man. Yeah. I mean, like I said, I probably learned more about the Texans, probably think higher of the Texans coming out of this game than I did coming in. The one thing I think Sonny touched on this that was just weird to me as I started looking through the stats coming out of this game, Lamar Jackson sacked 6 times on 49 passing attempts so far in 2020. We talk about, you know, Joe Burrow being under duress, Deshaun Watson being under duress. Lamar Jackson has been sacked as a percentage of his attempts more than either Watson or Burrow this year. Very interesting.
Because the problem is that the pressure is coming through the middle, right? And it's harder to elude. Yeah. When it's from the outside, you can just step up and then you can do a couple things. It's just coming straight through the middle. It's harder to just avoid that pressure.
Yeah. So just, again, it's only 2 weeks, right? 2 week sample size. I don't want to read too much into it, but
I'm just thinking about Stephon Tuitt blowing up that Ravens.
Oh, listen, I'm getting my it's actually, I don't know if you guys saw this. So ESPN has that new win rate thing that they're doing for defensive linemen, the pass rush win rate and run win rate. Mm-hmm. Tyson Alualu, okay? Former Jaguars first round pick. The best nose tackle in the game right now, according to that stat. Now, he's had a very good 2 weeks. I'm going to give you that. But much like when I looked at Chase Claypool's PFF grade, I went, okay, I mean, he's been good through 2 weeks, but the best wide receiver in football, let's chill a little bit. I looked at Tyson Alualu's win rate, and I went, okay, he's been good, but let's chill a little bit with the best nose tackle in the game. But he's been very good. So, hey, if the Ravens offensive line wants to improve exactly 0 between now and week 7, I'm all for it. I'm all for it.
Quincy, what are your thoughts on this game?
Yeah, man, this was my Beat That Booty Award winner of the week for the AFC North because the Ravens went in there and it wasn't fun. It wasn't spectacular. It wasn't like them games when they was beating that booty last year where they just get up by 40 and just start dancing on you. It was a little bit more sloppy, a little bit less organized. You know, they look very 12-4 right now. Like, they're going to win a lot of games, but, you know, I feel like they're going to have some areas where you could take advantage of them and make them lose a couple more games than they did last year because I don't think they're going to be as hot as they were last year. They didn't look as hot as they were last year this year, and that's not really a slight. They were the hottest team I've ever seen on earth for like 12 weeks last year. So, yeah, they beat that booty. They did exactly what you have to do to the Texans, which is just block and let the Texans be the Texans. Yeah. Because the Texans, they do this thing where they want to see Deshaun Watson make an incredible play on third and long just to get a holding or a sack or run 5 yards backwards and get set back on the very next first down. So they always end up at their own 40-yard line. That is where the Houston Texans live, on their own 40-yard line. It's so frustrating to watch. It's honestly makes me want to pull out my hair watching the Texans. I don't even care about the future of the Texans. That's just the team they are. That's just what you get with Bill O'Brien. You know, pretty mediocre stuff. So good thing for the Ravens, like, because the Texans aren't a terrible team. Good showing by the Ravens. They're going to be very good this year. The Texans, man, I know Deshaun Watson just signed that contract, but dude, he's got to be figuring like, yo, I'm not going to show up to camp next year. They got to trade me. Like, who wants to do this? How long is that contract? Like 6 years?
He got paid. Yeah. You got to give him that. He got paid.
I don't care how many, you want to do this to you 33, Deshaun?
Yeah.
You want to be in your mid? Like, this is cool now. You in your late? Yeah. You want to? You in your late 20s? Like, you can bounce back from your late 20s after a rough night and be all right. But when he's 30-something and he getting these elbows, oh, no. Nah, he's going to be like, no, dog, I can't do this. And he's look over at the sideline and still see Bill O'Brien because they're not getting rid of him anytime soon. Dog, he's going to retire early. He's on the Andrew Luck watch because this is a completely frustrating situation for him to be. They have tried to build an offensive line around him, but now it's gotten to a point to where he's so used to the offensive line being bad that he just holds on to the ball and waits for the first guy to get at him so he can break the pocket and make a play. I really wish Deshaun Watson would have went to a better team. Everybody's like doing the whole Joe Burrow should have went to a better team thing. I'm going to do it for Deshaun Watson because, man, this is the worst situation he could have possibly been in. Like, Bill O'Brien was a bad matchup to begin with. And then the general managing of him and his rosters has just been terrible. But nonetheless, by the way, Kyler Murray, Deshaun Hopkins, they look really good.
Yeah, no, you watch Houston, yeah. And you go, boy, man, if they had like a really good nose tackle, you know what I mean, like a really good run stuffing defensive tackle, and then like a legit wide receiver, this, you know, they might really put some things together.
They would really, like,
yeah, they would really be, put it together.
They might win 10 games if they had that, but now they gave them wins away to Arizona. Now Kyler Murray looks like an MVP candidate, and every day he plays, he saves my Lamar Jackson Kyler Murray take. Shout out to Kyler. He's doing that for me. But yeah, this is a beat them booty game. Not exciting. Kind of got sleepy in the middle of it because you knew what was going to go on. Every time Houston got close, you're like, ah, they're going to get a holding. They're going to take themselves out of this. You know, Baltimore is going to be a good team. Houston's going to be an up and down team who might be in the wild card race at the end of the season, but really they're just going to be important when it comes to tiebreakers.
To me, Houston's not going anywhere this year. I think that Bill O'Brien is getting canned this year. I think it's pretty much over. You know, you look at that situation and Deshaun Watson just doesn't, he obviously misses DeAndre Hopkins, right? Unless they're going to go out and make a trade for someone, these guys aren't going to cut it. You know, trusting that Brandon Cooks and Will Fuller are really going to make those plays, not a good situation to be in. But this one, I think the Ravens just came in and handled business. They did what they were supposed to do. They contained Deshaun Watson as much as possible. You know, I think if we're talking about this matchup last year, it's a more exciting matchup, right? Because it's Deshaun Watson versus LJ. But a lot of the air was taken out of the balloon thanks to Bill O'Brien trading away DeAndre Hopkins, not sustaining and keeping DJ Reader, as Tony alluded to. And this team just doesn't look the same. I mean, in the past, we've seen this be a team where, you know, they've had certain issues before it was the quarterback position. They finally have gotten their quarterback. And then they decided to just get rid of two of their top players outside of them. And I think that they were thinking that this would be like a Seattle Seahawks situation. It's not. It's not going to be close to that. And I think that this is finally going to be the one that does Bill O'Brien in because he's the one that made the trade. But when you talk about the Ravens, they came in, they handled business. Like Quincy said, they look like a 12-4 team. They could possibly be better than that. We're going to get the real spill from that this week coming up, which if you guys are tuning in now, be sure to subscribe because we will be coming back on Thursday with our preview for those games. But this Ravens team looks good. It's solid. I like what they did on the run game. I saw that they actually got more than just Mark Ingram and Some guys involved. I think they got Ricard involved, I think, in a touchdown in the receiving game. So they're going to be a good team. But like they also alluded to earlier, they talked about protection issues for Lamar Jackson. You got to keep him. You got to keep him upright. I don't think that it's a concern now. But hearing that he actually has been pressured more than Joe Burrow or sacked more than Joe Burrow, that's kind of scary because I'm a Bengals fan and I'm like, Joe Burrow's about to get killed. Like, we got to
remember, as a percentage of attempts, not total sacks.
Good. Okay, that's way better. That puts it in perspective.
Yeah. And Joe Burrow gets hit after release a ton.
The pressure stuff, I don't have.
Right. Okay, good. So, yeah, from what I've seen with this team, I mean, it looks like a good team. It looks like a team that's focused, that wants to get back to where they were at last year. And I think that they're just more focused this year, and it's like that's the tunnel vision on that. So I'm actually excited looking into the game that they're going to have coming up in week 3. But that does it for this show. So
actually, before we go, do you want to do one more thing? Sonny, do you want to give us an update on who leads the AFC North in receiving yards this
after 2 weeks? Deontay Johnson. I looked it up.
Is it really Deontay?
Deontay Moncrief.
Did Marquise Brown have another one of them 43-yard games?
Yes, he did.
Marquise Brown special, baby. Tyreek Hill, too. Right? Yeah.
He's coming. Don't worry about it. He's coming.
He still got that screw on his foot, right?
No, we'll get there. Don't worry.
But before we all get out, definitely be sure that you guys subscribe to the channel. We're nearing 1,000 subscribers. Definitely appreciate you guys. Love the support. We got 144, and I think at one point it was 160 people in here. Love the support. Awesome. I did see you guys talking about the audio. We will meet as a group after this and try to figure that out. It seems like you guys want to hear this on your audio wavelengths as well. So, hey, that's always good as well. but before we get out of here guys, any parting thoughts?
Benny Snell, -3 fantasy points. I hate you.
I hate him too.
One game sample size.
Kyler Murray, 35 fantasy points the last 2 weeks. I love you, Kyler. I love you. I would give away 40 Benny Snells.
I know this is AFC North talk, but the Cardinals are kind of like me being able to have those Thursday night games. We were able to watch like some of the other games. The Cardinals are a pretty fun team to watch, I'm not going to lie.
Yeah.
Oh, no, they're good. The problem with the Cardinals, that defense is not. And they got Isaiah Simmons there, but like he's like putting a heated seats in a Pinto. It just doesn't make very much sense. Like everything around that, like what's he going to do? Like he's a specialty piece. What's he going to do when he's out here trying to play 9 positions and all those? Like Patrick Peterson might be your best other defender. Like they got the other guy, Chandler Jones, right? But Chandler Jones, Isaiah Simmons, and then Boo Boo the Foo in the middle. I don't know what else they got going on there.
Buda Baker. Don't forget about Buda. And they got Patrick Peterson still.
Oh, he's the most overrated safety. I'm not a Buda Baker.
You hate all safeties. I mean, you just hate literally all safeties.
I hate B plus safeties that people tell me are A plus safeties. He's a B plus safety. He got Jalen Ramsey money. He has no interception.
He didn't get Jalen Ramsey money.
He got so much money.
He got good money, but I mean, it's a safety. It's a safety market.
Matt, how much money, how many millions of dollars did he get per interception? I want to know. I want to know what that contract looks like. All right.
They need a pressure number for secondary players.
But hey guys, thank you guys for listening to AFC North Talk. We will be back with you guys Thursday, and we are out.